Well, this is the first time I've been up to sing here since I had COVID, so I don't know how my breast support's going to be, and if it fades in the middle, please forgive me. This is a beautiful old song, and I was practicing it with Pat. She said, I don't think I know this one, and I looked at the author or the composer of the music, and it just so happened that he was the guy that had a radio broadcast that my father was led to know the Lord when he was 19. So I said, I think this is an old song. It's called He Goeth Before. Oh, Christian, art thou fearful? Of Jesus, it is I, take thou my hand. Be assured he has not left thee, life's dark way to tread alone. He the way will walk before thee, when he putteth forth his own. He goes before thee, Christian, to guide thee and sustain. He goes before thee, Christian, look up and courage gain. Dost fear temptation's fires? Fear thou not, it is his plan. There shall no temptation take thee, but is common unto man. An escape has been provided, and the test thou then canst bear. Follow him, he goes before thee, thou the victor's crown shall wear. He goes before thee, Christian, to guide thee and sustain. He goes before thee, Christian, look up and courage gain. Dost fear to bear the gospel? Fear thou not, go where he leads. Falter not, nor fear the conflict. Courage take, 'tis Christ who leads. Onward then and ever forward, pressing upward toward the prize, looking only unto Jesus. 'Tis in him the victory lies. He goes before thee, Christian, look up and courage gain. He goes before thee, Christian, look up and courage gain.
Thank you, David. Well, it was fun catching up with Sam today over lunch, and we probably hadn't seen each other for about 10 years. When he first asked me this morning, when was the last time we saw each other? Maybe it was last night. And so I kind of had to think back. And it was actually when we took my daughter out to California to visit West Coast College. And we went up and seen the camp. And I thought, wow, that was 10 years ago, like 9 or 10 years ago. I needed a walker right about that time to sit in or something. Man, that time has certainly flown by. Come on up, Sam. We're going to have him preach for us again tonight. He'll actually be leaving sometime in the morning and flying back to California tomorrow. So,
Sam. Amen.
Sunday night crowd, right? A little bit more relaxed.
Yeah, there's a rumor going about as to when I'm supposed to finish. So it ranges between 7:30 and midnight, somewhere in there. So we will share the word of God here in just a moment. Let's just talk just a little bit about what a camp is. I work in camp. We're kind of like a little toolbox for a church, you know, and we're like the evangelist who doesn't travel to the church. The church travels to us. And so where it like fits in the big picture of things is a church like this one would look at a camp and say, there's a tool that would really be helpful for our church. And they reach in that toolbox and they pick out whatever it is that that would be helpful. And there are things that camps can do that churches can't do as well. And a lot of that has to do with time, the amount of time that's spent in one place. They're kind of designed to serve a bunch of meals and possibly stay over the night and, you know, kind of have a little bit of time, which allows you to work on a schedule and put everything together. So when people are trying to figure out, okay, what is a camp worker like? Where do you fit in the Bible? Like, how does that work? It's the work of an evangelist. And very simply, it's our job to help churches in whatever they are trying to accomplish. And church has a number of different things that it's trying to do. There's lots of facets. A church doesn't do just one little thing. God's given us our church as the vehicle of this age in order to disciple, in order to worship him, in order to encourage one another, fellowship together. It really is an important piece of the puzzle, and we don't always realize how big a deal church is until in California they told us, you can't sing. And I'm like, what do you mean we can't sing? Like, and I'm not a singer. Like, I don't sing. I'm no good at it. I'm not in the choir. I love to listen to choirs. But when I was told that we couldn't sing, like, no. This is what we do in church. I didn't realize as we truncated our services and made things small and all that, wow, I miss the encouragement of just a whole bunch of people singing, even though I can't sing. And I appreciated the way Pastor McPhillips tried to hit that devotion. That is a high, you picked like the highest song. We had to hit that one way up there. But the rest of us are like, that's fun. That's like one of those encouraging things that we kind of work together. It's just a cool, cool thing. It's just amazing that God gives us a church, and it has so many different facets and functions and the way that it works. I want to tell you just a bit of a story. And normally, if I'm telling this at camp, it's like a three-part story. It's like 30 minutes long. We're not going to take that amount of time. But it does give you a little bit into the life of me, the way things would work. We are missionaries, and so we go around and we get support in order to be at camp. The camp provides about half of our needs, and the other half comes from churches. And so we go around and we do deputation on occasion and visit those churches. We have pets in our home, and I don't know the pets that you have, but we would raise English Springer Spaniels. So our first dog was a dog named Askham. Now, when you live at camp and your dog's always around campers, everybody asks, hey, what's your dog's name? And you just look at it and you say, ask him. And the person sits there and says, what's your name? And of course, the dog says nothing. And they're like, oh, he's not telling me. What's your dog's name? Ask him. And I just point at it like that. Ask them. And if I'll do all of that number, boy, it'll go on for a solid half hour before they realize what's going on. After that, it kind of became a tradition that's what we would name our dog, is something like that. So the next dog, my youth group helped me name it. We named it Guess. This was better than Ask Him. Hey, what's your dog's name? Guess. I don't know. Rover. Nope. Guess. Spot. Nope. Guess. And boy, you could go almost all week. Okay, what about Hezekiah? No, guess. And it would go on for a long time. Now, unfortunately, with that dog, we ended up with another dog at the same time, and I wanted the names to kind of mesh together. So we named this next dog What? That is a bad name for a dog. I mean, so in my mind, it was like, guess what's lying out in the yard, but it didn't really work that way. It worked like this, like you had to go get your dog from outside and you'd be yelling out. I mean, you'd step outside, hey, what? Your neighbors are kind of like, what? You know, and so What wasn't a great name. We ended up just a couple of years ago, we had a dog named Kitty. There's nothing better than, hey, kitty, kitty, kitty. That's a fun name for a dog. My wife works at a daycare with a bunch of little kids, 3s and 4-year-olds, you know. And so every now and then she gets to say, hey, Kitty had puppies. And of course the kids are like, how does that work? That was a lot of fun. We have in our backyard is a pet cemetery. Now, we've lived there all of our years except for one. Cindy and I, all of our married years except for one. We have 21 crosses in the pet cemetery. So there have been a lot of pets over the years. And there's one by the name of Cuddles. Now, Cuddles is a hamster. How many of you have had hamsters somewhere along the way? You've had a hamster? How many of you still have the hamster? Yes, that is the way of hamsters. And so my daughter wanted a hamster. She was maybe 10 years old. She's like, I just really want a hamster. And Cindy would say, no, resolutely, no, we're not having a rodent in the house. There's no way we're having a rodent in the house. And she really wanted one. Finally, she came and asked me. And in my bright mind, I don't know what I was thinking. I said, Hannah, you can have a hamster, but you have to submit a full business plan and pay the full expenses of that business plan. Thanks, Dad. Mom, Dad said I could have a hamster. Cindy gives me the evil eye, and she's like, what in the world are you doing? You know I don't want a hamster in the house. And she's like, I'm like, no, dear. She has to write a business plan. She's not going to even, what's a business plan? You know, income, expenses, all the process. She's got to know everything about hamsters. It's like a 6-page paper minimum. She's like, oh, okay. And then she's got to save money. And in our home, they get $1.50 for a work for like a week. And that's for like the chores and everything. And in our home, if you didn't do a chore right or you missed one of the 20 or so that you had to do every day, you lost a nickel. And so Hannah would routinely gross some net somewhere in the neighborhood of about 80 cents. She was not good at chores. And so here we are with she's making maybe 70 cents, 80 cents, 90 cents on a really good week. And I said, dear, don't worry about it. She's got to turn all this in. Well, Hannah, after 3 or 4 weeks, she's got this massive business plan. She's got pictures of where to buy it and what to buy and how much it's going to cost and food and sawdust. And she's like, and look, Dad, out of the wood shop, we can get sawdust and save money. And I'm like, okay, great. And I'm looking at all this and I'm like, this is impressive. But at the end, it's going to cost her $39. For the little dinky house and the ball and the food and to buy the hamster. And so my wife's like, she turned in a business plan. What is going on? I said, okay, don't worry. She's got to save $39 and she's got like two and she can't even go through the Walmart aisle with more than $4 in her pocket without buying something. We'll be fine. She's like, okay, I hope so. I hope so because I do not want a rat living in the house. I said, I understand. And so the summer went by week after week. Hannah is adding up her 70 cents, her 80 cents. She's kind of getting better at chores even. She's up to like $1.10. You know, we're handing that out, and Sydney's like, ooh, she's up at like $7. I said, well, next time in town, we're just going to walk through the toy aisle, we're just spend a whole bunch of time in the candy aisle. That's her money to spend. And my wife is just like, just really nervous about this. Don't worry about it. At the end of the summer, Hannah has saved $9. And Cindy is about ready to have a heart attack because she is a mere $30 away from getting this hamster. I said, do not worry about it. We're going on vacation. We've got this deputation trip. She'll spend the money. And we went up and down Walmart. We looked, look at this, Hannah. Wouldn't you like? No, I'm saving for a hamster. Evil eye right there. And I was totally in the doghouse. And we went to this church. And at this church, they were just going to have us present. But during the 2 days that we were there, they got excited about our ministry. And the pastor says, hey, the folks are really excited about what's going on. The guys might, they might just vote and you guys will become missionaries of our church. And I'm like, huh, that's great. And he said, I don't know what'll happen. We'll just see what goes on. Okay. And so we were there on the final night that we were there. And the pastor says, I'd like the Brock family to come forward. And I'm like, I'm kind of smiling. Cindy's smiling. This is like a raise for us, is that they're thinking about supporting our family. And so we walk up there on the stage and the pastor gets up and our four kids are standing there. And he's like, this is the Brock family. And I want everybody to know that the deacon have voted, and these are our new missionaries. Everybody's all excited. Yeah. And the pastor pulls out his wallet, and he's like, and I just want to start this off right. And he pulls out his wallet, and he opens it up, and he hands four $50 bills, one of them to each kid. Bodie and Cheyenne and Sierra, they are smiling. Hannah is ecstatic. She's like, I mean, the whole audience is like looking at this girl's expression, and it's just like, wow. And then they get to my wife, and there's this ashen look on her face. And the double evil eye with the two lasers are pointed at me, who's got this look of, oh no. It was the weirdest look of expressions in handing out $200 possible. Hannah doesn't say a word. She's just kind of bouncing, you know? She's just kind of bouncing, and she's holding it right there. And we make our way out to the Suburban. They haven't said anything. We get in the car, and we walk away. My wife just looks at me and doesn't say a word. And Hannah blurts out, I can get the mansion, the whole one that fits in the closet now. $59. We need to stop at the store. And she's going through everything that she has. Hannah, or my wife, Cindy, she's just like, I cannot believe this. So we get home, and they buy this Cuddles, orange and white and brown, and it's Cuddles. And we bring it to the house. We set everything up. My wife can't believe this has happened. A day goes by. We go to church on that Sunday. We come back home. Everybody's inside. We're talking to a neighbor for 5 or 10 minutes, and Bodie, huge alligator tears coming down his face. He's, we didn't mean to. And Cindy and I are like, what is going on? We run inside, and there's three girls sitting around a play school bus, this little play school bus, and they're just blubbering. I'm like, girls, what is wrong? She's gonna die. And finally, we calmed them down enough to find out that they had set Cuddles in the front seat of this play school bus. And you know where you put your action figure's feet in the bus? Cuddles had slid through into the engine compartment of this bus. They couldn't get him out. They thought for sure he was going to die. Well, I'm the dad. What's the worst that could happen? I kind of grabbed that bus, and I'm like, okay, I'll get him out. And I'm like reaching in. I said, go out to the wood shop. Grab some needle nose pliers. And I'm trying to get at that. And I can't get at that. A hamster's like all over the place. Oh, man. And so finally, I think to myself, okay, I'm the dad. What's the worst that could happen? I'm going to take this bus, and I'm just going to make it miserable inside the bus. He'll come out that way. He didn't come out. I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? I'm the dad. What's the worst? Okay, centrifugal force. I grab that bus by the engine compartment, and I start spinning it as fast as I possibly can, trying to get that thing to, like, pop out. Doesn't work. I'm the dad. What's the worst that could happen? I decide to take it out to the wood shop. And this, any of the kids in the room, don't let your dad take your pet to the wood shop. And so I take the bus and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to cut the top off of this bus. Like, I'm going to ruin the bus, but that's okay. We'll get Cuddles out. So I poof, 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 take off the bus. I've got a convertible bus sitting there. And I'm like, oh, now the needle nose pliers, I can get at it much better. But that hamster's having nothing to do with me getting him out. Nothing at all. And I finally decide I'm going to cut the bus in half. I know that it won't be useful anymore. The bus costs more than the hamster. That's okay. Here we go. And I push that bus through, and I've got this huge bandsaw. Bought it from a cabinet shop. Huge 36-inch gullet that's on it. It's a specialty blade. Like, you have to order it special, certain length of blade. It costs more than all their toys inside. And I'm running that bus through that thing, and there's yellow sawdust. And all of a sudden, I get to the middle of that bus. Now, I did not realize it at the time, but that bus has a little tunnel. Just like a VW has a little tunnel that goes down the center of it, that hamster had gotten into that tunnel. And as I'm pushing it across, all of a sudden red and hair and all of this stuff, and I pull that back as fast as I can, bam, and I pop the blade, and I'm like, that costs more than the three of the buses right there. And I'm like, the hamster is dead. And I opened up that bus, and I shook it out on the table saw. And Cuddles fell down on the table saw. And I can't really tell what's going on. He starts to open up just a little bit. And it started cutting right behind his jaw. But it didn't cut through. It just shaved him really. No ear. The ear was gone. Just a hole in the side of his head. And right here, it started cutting through. And it just peeled the skin all the way to his back leg. Like a giant just thing right there. And I'm like, oh, I'm the dad. What's the worst that could happen? And I'm getting ready to put the hamster out of his misery. I'm just getting ready to just, you know, just boop. And right when I'm doing that, Cindy walks in the garage. What happened? Nothing. And she's like, what is that? Ooh, is that Cuddles? Oh. She says, you got to tell Hannah. I said, no, I can't tell. I can't tell Hannah. She's like, no, he's still living. You got to tell Hannah. I said, okay, I'll run in and tell Hannah. So I go in, I said, Hannah, we've got three options. First of all, we could put him out of his misery. What does that mean? Okay, secondly, we could just let him go like out in the forest. Let's just let him, we'll just let him go. She's like, is he alive? I said, well, kind of. He was when I left. I've got to see him. So she runs out there and she sees just this mess and no ear and everything, just blood on the side. And she picks him up and she takes him in and sets him down. And every hour on the hour, Hannah, he's alive all night long. He's alive. I'm like, Hannah, I don't want you knocking on this door till like 6 a.m. Okay, 6 a.m. He's alive. I look over at my wife, evil eye, and I'm like, I cannot believe this. And that hamster developed the largest body scab you've ever seen. He kind of healed up. The ear was always gone. Yeah, that doesn't come back. And where the skin came back, that became the bald section. Because the skin, there's no hair when it grew back. So he's a bald hamster in the wrong part of his body, missing an ear. And he went to show and tell 3 weeks later. He came home from show and tell, and the girls have renamed him Lucky Cuddles. I'm like, girls, why did you name him Lucky Cuddles? And Sierra, our ever observant one, our second, she looks at me and she says, Dad, we don't know what all happened in the wood shop, but we know it could have been a whole lot worse. And I kind of smiled. And I realized that what she said was exactly right. It could have been a whole lot worse. Turn in your Bibles to Psalm 46. If I were going to entitle this chapter and give it a title, I would call it, What's the Worst That Could Happen? I want you to use your imagination like you just did just now, and I want us to read these few verses, because there is a verse in here that's really common to us. That's verse 10, Be still and know that I am God. But let's look at what's around it, and you are going to see a chapter that is like, to a human being, oh, this is the worst that could possibly happen. Now, I've just shared a story with you for a hamster that I believe is about as bad as it could get. But for a human being, What's the worst that could happen? Psalm 46, verse 1. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Probably a verse that I like just as much as verse 10. Wow, that's a big one right there. I love all the words in there. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. All of us find ourselves in that spot every now and then, that spot called trouble. It's not on the map. It's not like we went there on purpose, but we find ourselves at that place. Verse 1, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Verse 2, therefore will not we fear, though, this is interesting. He gives us a fact about God is our help and our strength, and he says, okay, you know, guys, I forgot to unmute. I'm gonna unmute right now. There we go. Thank you. He sits there and he says, okay, he's my strength. Therefore, will not we fear, though. Okay, so even if this is happening, even if this is on the news, I'm not going to worry about it. Even though the earth be removed. What? And though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea. Oh, yeah. I'm not going to worry about that. What? Though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. Mountains swelling? Mountains shaking? Mountains moving into the ocean? I mean, it makes national news when we have a little mudslide in Malibu. What if whole mountains just went cascading into the ocean? Whoa. That's bad. That's really bad. Jobs are lost. Livelihood is lost. Homes are destroyed. Okay. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help and trouble. I'm not going to fear, even though that might be happening. It's interesting, verse 4 takes us to a whole different place. So if you're trying to imagine verses 2 and 3, it is just utter chaos. I can just imagine the reporter trying to show this thing behind them and being like totally scared and everything happening. And then verse 4 just has this contrast of quiet and tranquil. In verse 4, it says, there is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. Wow, the difference. Stability here in this verses 4 and 5, utter chaos in verses 2 and 3. We see the difference in the way things are going and what's happening. And then suddenly we go from this tranquility and God is in the midst of her and she will not be moved. And then it's like it just whoosh. And it takes us over to verse 6. The heathen raged. The kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice. The earth melted. Just try to visualize that. The earth melted. Now, I live in desert heat where we go into Plan B at 110 degrees. The top temperature this last summer was 117. One of our favorite things to do is to get ice cream. And ice cream, when you get it, it is a race. It's you versus the desert. And you got to eat like mad. You got to lick, 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 lick. Oh, man, over on this side. You got to go fast. Like when I get ice cream every now and then back east here, well, in a few humid places, it's been the same run. But I'm like, man, this is easy. 85 degrees and ice cream, there's no work at this. Piece of cake. 110 degrees in ice cream, and you're trying to eat that thing. It comes across the counter, and you know how you can see all the little crystallization and all of that sort of stuff? And about 3 minutes later, it's just, whoa. So let's imagine the earth. Up close, there's houses and trees, and there's all this stuff, and there's trees, and there's cars whizzing by, and there's little signs all over the place. And the earth melted. Blah. Well, that's bad. That's really bad. really, really bad. Verse 7, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of our refuge, the God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. Verse 8, come, behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath made in the earth. Here's what God is able to do, verse 9. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Again, when this is written, chariot would have been the highest weapon that they had of the time. That armies were numbered by foot soldiers, by people on horses, and in a big way by chariots. Chariots were a big deal. And he doesn't have any trouble with any of those. He breaks them in parts, burns them up. It's no big deal. Okay, and I'm imagining this. I'm imagining wars that God is ending. He's destroying the weaponry of people who are at war. And again, bedlam, chaos, a mess. What's the worst that could happen? That's pretty bad. And then one of the most interesting words to me in Scripture, and one that for a while I didn't understand, verse 10, be still. Okay, this is the part where people are being told to, okay, you need to evacuate. This is not a voluntary thing. It's a mandatory thing. The earth is melting. Mountains are going into the waters. God is destroying armies. The heathen are raging. You need to find a say, like, this is, I'm scared. And then we have verse 10, be still. Okay, so I understand be still. Be still for me was Sunday night service and mom saying, be still, be still, be still. Yes. Don't move, don't talk, be quiet, be still. For me, that's what be still meant. As you study what be still is, it literally means to let down. Okay. Be still. Now the next verse, the next few words, they don't help me at all. Be still and know that I am God. When I was working through this and reading through this, I'm like, boy, I'm imagining all this. This has been really easy for me to imagine. And then I don't understand. Be still and know that I am God. How did those be still and know that I am God? And I was thinking back and I was thinking through, how would I illustrate this? How would I understand this? How would I get how these two words go together? And I remembered the time in my life where I was most scared for my life. And I remember the situation in vivid detail because to this day, my heart beats hard when I think about this moment. I was working with a group of about 9 or 10 young people. I had my friend Tom, who worked at the camp along with me, and we had decided to take the guys on an overnight camping trip. We didn't tell anybody where we were going. It was in the springtime. Tom's wife was expecting, but that wasn't for a few weeks. And we were on our way to a huge, what they called Spooky Canyon. Spooky Canyon is this canyon that you start in, and it's about 150 feet high. And as you make your way in, you're in the bottom of a wash, but it gets narrower and narrower to the point that in daylight, it feels like you're in a cave. But you're 100 feet down in a wash. And we'd found this little spot off on the side where we could climb up. You went up Spooky Canyon 50, 60 yards, and you climbed up through this little hole. You had to climb up into it, and inside there was a space maybe this big, enough room for us 12 or so guys to spread out our sleeping bags and fill out the whole area. You would look there, you would lay there, and you would look up 100 feet, and you could just see a teardrop of the stars and sky way above you. We're like, this is cool. This is so fun. Yeah, this is great. And then I told a story that I've never told since then. It's the story of Voodoo Bear. And no matter how much you ask me to tell it, I'll never tell it again. Because I must have told it too well. because at about 1 a.m, after telling it for about an hour and a half, half of the guys were crying. And I'm like, guys, I was just kidding. I know, but I'm so scared. I don't know. And everybody was scared silly. And I'm like, guys, it was just a story. It's not true. And the guy, okay, it's not true. And we're sitting there, and then somebody says, you know, what if a coyote knocked a pebble over? You know how like a penny cracks the sidewalk on the Empire State Building? Like a gravel, that would knock our head open. All of us got nervous, and we're putting pillows over our head, and we're putting a belt like a pillow bonnet right there. And then some yahoo in the group is tossing pebbles like they're coming down in the thing. And then they're all scared. And then somewhere around 2 a.m, we heard this car go by, like two of them. And they're like, what is that? And I told him it was the deranged ranger who makes his way through the... And they're crying, no, guys, I'm just kidding. Man. And then the train goes by, and we talk about the same thing. It's about 2:30 a.m, and we hear those vehicles come back, and they stop where our vehicles were, and we hear all these doors slam and all this yelling and stuff. And the guys are like, who's that? And I said, I don't know. No, Mr. Sam, like, who is it? Did you have somebody come out? And no, I don't know who that is. And I look over at Tom, and I said, can you tell what they're saying? And we could hear, rah, 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 rah. I said, I'm nervous for our cars. They might be messing with our cars. And Tom looks over at me. He says, Sam, I'm nervous about us. Don't worry about the cars. You're right. Okay. Everybody, shut up. And they look at us. They're like, why? Because there's guys trying to come kill us. Really? Shut up. Okay. And the guys are all sitting there, and I hear a couple of whimpers over in the corner, and we're all just sitting there, and you can hear this yelling, and then it stopped, but now it sounds like they're walking up toward us. And I reached in my bag, and I showed Tom. I said, Tom, I've got my little .22 Ruger with me. And he's like, oh, good, good. He says, I'll stand in the gap. Don't let anybody get past me. You right behind me. I said, okay, Tom, we're not letting anybody through. We're going to protect these guys. Whoever's down there, whatever mass murderer, whatever it is, let's not worry about it. And so we're going to, and so Tom is sitting at the gap, and we can kind of see now the lights shining through that little gap, through the hole as they're walking up. I'm right behind him. I mean, I am so scared. I am so tense, and I'm ready, and whatever might happen, and they're getting closer. As they're walking up, one of the guys wakes up, and he's like, hey, what's... And like five guys, boom! Shut up. We're about to die. And I'm thinking to myself, I cannot believe I put myself in. Nobody knows where we're at. Nobody knows what's going on. And we're waiting, and those lights come right to the gap, right in the spot where we're at. Tom and I are totally tense, and we hear this voice that says, they should be here. And it's the voice of our program director, Miss Carol, a voice that I know. And then I hear another voice, Larry, who says, yeah, they should be here. And suddenly, oh, Carol, Larry, Cuckoo, we're in here. I know that voice. And I know they don't want to kill us. I suddenly realized, as I'm totally like, oh, man, I thought we were about to die. I thought everything was going to go. This was, oh, man, I'm so glad to hear your voice. I am now literally doing be still. To let go, to be totally, whoo. Why? Because I know the voice of that person. Be still and know that I am God. The reason that I can, whoo, is because of what I know of God. Look at the next phrase. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. God is more powerful than any person. I will be established in the earth. God is more powerful than the creation that he has made. He's more powerful than this earth. He's more powerful than the storms of this earth. He's more powerful than anything that is created. The Lord of hosts is with us. Whoa. He's not just out there, and he's not just powerful. He's on our side. He's with us. And then what does that do? The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. That's all I got to know. So if the worst is going on, I was nervous there for a moment, but I could be still because I know God. Bigger than the problem, bigger than the situation, bigger than the people, bigger than the government, bigger than the army, bigger than the weapons, bigger than the storm, bigger than the mountains, bigger than the problem. And he's with us. And he gives us the refuge. Whew. I was worried there for a moment. I forgot that. Be still and know that I am God. I walked away from that situation. And as I looked back on that situation, I remember just the almost the euphoria of thinking that things were doomed and then realizing it's all good. And I think so easily we get pulled into, oh, this is the worst that could possibly happen. This is horrible. This is unbelievable. Wait a minute. Be still and know that I am God. I'm so thankful that I don't have to know everything about God, that it didn't give me a list of 43 things to know about God. It's like two verses. Know that I'm bigger than people. I'm bigger than creation. God is with us, and he is our refuge. That's all I need to know. So again, I don't know the story of what you're going through. And I know that everyone has one. Everybody's going through things. There's big things that are happening. Whether you've told other people or not, I don't know that. But God brings us through those big things and gives us an opportunity to just be still in the midst of the worst that could be happening. I think we've got to go all the way back to the story of Cuddles. And we've got to recognize that whatever situation we're going in, maybe I'm about to lose a leg. Maybe I'm about to lose my life. Maybe financially everything has gone to shambles. Maybe there's some relationships that are just really struggling. Maybe there's some people that have just made my life miserable, hard. When the girls sit there and say, no, we renamed him Lucky Cuddles because it could have been a whole lot worse. Can we not look at our lives and whatever we're going through, recognize that we are blessed? Because whatever we're going through in this life here on earth, we get to spend an eternity with God in heaven. It could be a whole lot worse. And maybe there's a few people that you know who have not put their belief in the gospel. They've not recognize and put their faith and trust in what God did on the cross and what he did for each one of us. And those folks truly have something to be afraid of. Truly. The worst very could possibly happen where they spend an eternity separated from God. And it makes me want to talk to people in their worst moments, in their best moments, in every opportunity that God gives me to be a neighbor, to say, can I tell you how you can spend an eternity in heaven? Can I tell you about what God has done for me? Can I tell you how I can go through my life and not worry? That I can go through everything in life and just be still because of what I know about my God. This kind of passage is just one of those ones that kind of makes me smile. Even though really bad things are happening, it's almost like you need the really bad things for Psalm 46 to kick in. and see the contrast. Wait a minute. Just be still and know that I am God. And then when I'm like that, I'm like, whoa. I need to tell everybody else who doesn't have that refuge. I need to get that word out. This is one of those encouraging psalms that also pushes me to action. Be still and know that I am God. Would you bow your heads, close your eyes? Two messages today that kind of have a part one, part two flavor to them. Kind of have a, I don't know what's going on in your mind, and I don't know where your head is. I find that when good friends make really bad choices, that it's usually built on some really bad thinking that happened for days, weeks, or months beforehand. So sometimes we don't know what's going on in somebody's head until they've been thinking about it for quite some time. These two passages are passages that help us think right in the midst of living life. And so they are maintenance type things, like any situation, any circumstance could send us down a path of thinking wrong. And it's these kind of verses that remind us, whoa, God is big, God is with us, God is bigger than anything. I need to be still. I need to know that he is God. I need to know that the goodness, that the essence of good is the nearness of God. I need to keep thinking that because there are particular things that are happening that really easily take me off of that thought. So once again, I want to give you some quiet moment. We'll have the organ play just a little bit there. But I want you to pray to God. Just pray and say, God, I want to be still. I want to be the testimony to everybody around me that you are God. Like not just little God, like big God. You are God bigger than my problems. You are God, you are God bigger than my boss, than my enemy. You are God bigger than the person who really makes life hard for me. God, you are bigger than this government. You are bigger than any world government. You are bigger than any man. I'm not worried about sickness. I'm not worried about death. You're bigger than death. The essence of good is the nearness of God. Be still and know that I am God. I'm bigger than the planet. I'm bigger than the people on the planet. God is with us, and he is our refuge. Whew. Thank you, God. Thank you. Life just got simpler. Life just got easier. Life just got bearable. No. Life just got good. He is big. He is so, so big. Dear God, I thank you for these two psalms, psalms that the Israelites sang, psalms that they reminded themselves of regularly. And Lord, these are thoughts, these are truths that we probably need every week, if not every day. Thank you for bringing us together and being able to together share these things with each other. And Lord, I pray that we would share those burdens with one another, but we would also remind one another of how big our God is. We pray all these things in your name. Amen.